Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Wednesday, July 1st, 2015, Clark County Clean Water Commission bi-monthly meeting. This meeting will now be called to order. First, we'll do roll call. So, Dick Rylander, here. Jerry Schaefer?
Here.
Jim Carlson?
Here.
Marie? Lamont? Bacon? Not here. David Meyer is absent by notice. Susan Rasmussen is AWOL. Mark Schneider? Also AWOL. And Kate Chu?
Here.
All right. One, two, three, four, five. We have a quorum. We can then proceed with our meeting. First item on the agenda is the review of the packet information. Oh, I'm sorry. Is it been open?
Yeah, we'll work it.
I was juggling.
I was on by email.
Okay.
By Jen.
Well, see, I did email. But anyway, so this morning, we interviewed two candidates for the open position, and we made a decision, and our newest member, who will be receiving his letter, sign off and formalized, been notified, the little process is in attendance, and David McDevitt, David, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is David McDevitt. I've been a resident of Vancouver for the last 3+ years. I first moved into an apartment for a year and then bought a house 2 years ago. I looked at this opportunity. It looked like a great thing to be involved in. And pretty nonpartisan kind of thing to do. Everybody concerns themselves just with clean water, so it seems like the right opportunity for me to be able to contribute and involve myself in the community.
Welcome aboard. David, although he's not practicing, he passed bar exam in California, although he's not practicing. So he brings that background. Strong IT as well.
What we said this morning, I have a strong IT background, I have a strong finance background, budgeting, business planning, strategic planning, and I am actually a licensed attorney in California, although I've never practiced. Anybody that wants to go to law school and then pass the bar exam in their 50s has got to be nuts. So I invested a great deal of time doing that. And
a little money.
And a lot of money. Fortunately, it wasn't my money.
Anyway, so David, welcome. So we will be making arrangements to get you to find your packet material, and I imagine then we can work with Earl. And we do sort of a little welcome intro thing that we've done with the other new members. So we'll make arrangements.
Right.
And all that. All right. Now, next item. So Earl, would you like to review the packet?
So tonight's packet is item one, the agenda, which is for July 1. Item two is going to be the meeting summary from the May meeting, May 6th. Item three, Rod Swanson is going to be talking about the stormwater program, code, and design manual update. Those are the items that we have in tonight's packet for discussion.
Thank you, Earl. So the first item, active item on the agenda, is to review and hopefully approve the meeting summary from our May 6, 2015 meeting. So, any discussion, or do I have a recommendation for approval? Do I have a second? Any discussion? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone disagree? The ayes have it. Minutes are adopted. May 6, 2015. Thank you. On next item on our agenda is public comments. have any public comments at this point in time? Head shaking, no, no, move on. Okay, it's hot, it's hot. So please stay here for this winter. We have a beautiful view. Okay, no public comments in this time, moving on. Next item on the agenda is a presentation, discussion, recommendation, and action from the Clark County NPDES Municipal Code Design Manual Update. Our guest, Rod Swanson, will walk us through some slide material and answer questions in the discussion.
Folks in the front line will move to the director.
Our action is to watch.
Maybe just a little more background. Our NPDES stormwater permit has maybe about 11 main components to it. They're pretty standard across the country. The Department of Ecology has a little more complex and prescriptive permit than most states have. Clark County is one of six phase one permittees. We've been a permittee since 1999.
Can you speak up?
Oh, yeah, sure. We've been a permittee since 1999. The other phase one permittees are Seattle, Tacoma, Kane County, Snohomish County, and Pierce County. And then WashDOT inside those areas is also a phase one permittee. The main components of the permit are we have to have legal authority to control the discharge of pollutants into our storm sewer system. Clark County has approximately 8,000 stormwater outfalls to be counted every ditch in the county that goes into a drainage way. I can't even tell you how many miles of pipe we have. There are approximately 1,900 stormwater control facilities in Clark County. Inspector, we have to have a system to inventory and manage a stormwater conveyance system facilities that on the plant to treat and control stormwater. We have to have internal coordination programs so the departments can work together, executive directors and have the departments work together, that type of thing. Plus, we need to coordinate with other permittees like the City of Vancouver, whose storm sewer systems connect to ours or ours to others. There are not very many of those in Clark County, really. It's kind of surprising. We have to have public involvement in our program. This particular committee or council commission is part of the public involvement process. Also, we update our stormwater management plan every year and post it on the web so people can see. It's about 140 pages long and it describes the program in fairly good detail. That's part of that. Then the one we're talking about tonight primarily is the requirement to have development regulations for new development and redevelopment inside the area of MS-4 and for Clark County, for the entire county, outside of the permit requirement itself. And also, in that part of the permit to regulate development and redevelopment, there's another requirement in there that's unique to our permit in Washington, is to do a watershed scale stormwater plan, which we're working on for Whipple Creek, and that will be completed sometime probably in early 2017. Next component is to have a capital program to retrofit areas that don't have stormwater pre-burner flow control. And that's a fairly significant part of our budget. It goes up and down to maybe $1 million to $2 million in projects. So we get grants for some of those projects. So that's a good part of the program. We have a program to control pollution from business and multifamily residential industrial sites. We do about 350 business visits each year. Everything from finding people who are dumping their products out the back door in the storm drain to places like movie theaters that have giant trash compactors squeezing popcorn oil and spilled pop out of the back into the storm drain into our system. I think last year we had about 25 dumpsters replaced. It was one funny thing you never think about until you start looking behind buildings. And we also have a program that's kind of integrated with the source control work to basically do surveillance on the storm sewer system to find potential or actual non-stormwater discharges, connected sewer lines, that type of thing. There are very few of those in Clark County, but every once in a while we find something. And then a really big component of the program is the operation and maintenance of the storm sewer system. We contract with Public Works, road operations primarily to do all that work. And then we have education outreach that targets specific audiences to help reduce the pollutants that are going into the storm sewer. And lastly, we have a monitoring department, which primarily involves us monitoring stormwater for a large number of constituents and pollutants at two stormwater outfalls. One's on Highway 99, just north of 78th Street, and the other is a large area of Lida that drains to like a 40-inch pipe, about 248 acres, like 1980s, 1990s residential development. We've been doing those for about 5 years. So, unscripted there. So basically, the overview of our presentation here is it's an update of our stormwater code and manual. We've been involved, a number of highlights from the project, things you might want to take away. The Department of Ecology commented on our draft manual, which we submitted last year. So we're using their comments and a number of comments from staff and public technical groups involved to make the final draft of the manual as we're speaking right now, and to sort of an overall project schedule, and then what's next. So here's kind of the simplistic picture of the overall hierarchy of the MPDES permit and how we implement it in Clark County, sort of a top-down approach to look at it from the United States Department of Environmental Protection, EPA, I should say, has delegated the Washington Department of Ecology the authority to issue the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit in Washington. Now the permit would be one that would be for anything from a sewage treatment plant to a construction site. So the Department of Ecology actually issues the permit, but ultimately the EPA and the federal government are responsible in one way or another. The Clean Water Act has a citizen lawsuit enforcement provision in it. So if we get a permit from the Department of Ecology of Clark County and we're not following that permit, a citizen could sue Clark County in federal court. And it happens every once in a while. So at the county level, we have the county manager and the county, I always want to say commissioner, because now it's the council. After 25 years, it's hard to change. Then under that, mainly the Department of Environmental Services is the main responsibility for sort of the oversight of the permit and working with other departments to make sure everybody's doing the things they need to do to comply with the permit. Public Works has a really significant role. The Department of Community Development has an important role that they issue all the building permits and process land use applications. Community planning, which does long-range planning, comprehensive planning, has a fairly small role. They help us out with things like managing process for getting stormwater code through the county council, that type of thing. General services is important because they own a lot of properties and facilities in the county, and those facilities need to be operated in a way that doesn't discharge pollutants. Prosecuting attorneys are a friend. They keep us out of jail. And public health has a fairly minor role. The other stakeholders, we've got partner agencies out there, washed out, we can do some work with them. Other permittees, especially up north, Puget Sound permittees, have worked with fairly closely on development programs. And then locally, we coordinate with the Facebook cities, Battleground, and with Washugo, Vancouver, to share sometimes what we have with them. They're much junior permittees in time, and their permits are strict and honest. Of course, the general public is involved in that process for developing things. So, yeah, project, the manual code updates, the permit requirement we're working on. We started it, gosh, I think it was, it's been so long.
October 2013.
I think we actually started before the 2013 permit.
in late 2012. Jane Kleiner and I have been working on it. Ron Greenberg was working on it quite a bit. And we're getting to the point where we're closing in on
one of the goals of the program. The last coded manual update, what we had done was we had a fairly lengthy ordinance code in the county code, plus reference the ecology manual, which is really not written to be code, it's written to be a guidance document, so it has a lot of information and it's not really necessary, or maybe is it a little ambiguous about what really has to be done. And then we also had a county manual that was sort of an addendum to the ecology manual that covered things that weren't in the ecology manual. So what we wanted to do is take it all apart, put it back together again so it's cleaner, more streamlined, and didn't include things that people didn't need, and reorganize it a little bit, and also got the code down to about 8 pages from about 25 pages. So everything is pretty much in the manual. But our main goal is like simplifying the manual, and of course to have an equivalent manual to the one referenced by our stormwater permit, which is the stormwater management manual for Western Washington, which is the standard ecology guidance document for stormwater management. The main difference between the previous manual that ecology published and the manual that we're being equivalent to is the inclusion of the mandate to use low impact development practices for all development and redevelopment sites. Kind of simplistically, people have to use rain gardens, bio retention, permeable pavement to the extent it's feasible for their project. So the feasibility criteria actually included in the manual that ecology published and in our manual as well. There are long lists of things.
So,
sure.
They put on a new Toyota.
Toyota and Richards?
Yeah, and Richards. You see a few
7.5 acres,
yeah.
1.8 million pavers, $2 million.
You got that count.
Can you pay for part of that?
Pardon?
Can you pay for part of that?
The county had some kind of agreement with the developer, and I can't remember much about it.
Well, they don't pay. It helps with stormwater fees because it's permanent, it's not.
No, it is. Actually, it's inside the city of Vancouver now. When it was developed, it was in Clark County, but it's the county system.
My question, though, is that you said using permeable pavers when appropriate. Why that caveat? Why not just say, you know, use permeable pavers?
The way it's structured, the permit itself requires the use of LID features such as permeable pavement, and then the manual includes infeasibility criteria. So let's say it's infeasible to use impermeable pavement if the underlying soil is clay, because they won't work, so why bother doing it? Or it's infeasible to use permeable pavement if it's a slope more than 5% because the water will just run off it anyway. Or it's infeasible to use permeable pavement or an arterial because the roads are wearing surface won't last long enough and we can hardly maintain and repair. But it is feasible to use permeable pavement for, say, a neighborhood access street or a parking lot, that type of thing. So it's kind of a combination of technical and maybe policy issues. And that's how they all are. So like for, say, a bioretention facility, which is a fancy engineered rain garden, it would be infeasible where the soil underneath it infiltrates at a rate of less than 0.3 inches per hour. You can use them for treatment, but you couldn't use it for the purpose of the ecology manual, which is to make water disappear into the ground. It's not just for
treatment.
And so one main part of it is to update our code and manual, and then another part, which is fairly significant, that turned out to be not a huge effort, is we're revising our development code, Title 40, which includes all the development code, I think it's a set of binders as fit, to remove barriers to low impact development fees. A few years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, the county did a big
project to update the road standards, like the standard cost questions for all the different classifications of roads. And we went through an effort then to make them permissive of what impact development features like permeable pavement and fire retention facilities. So that was the hardest part. We'd already done that. But an example of a barrier to LID would be, say, at the edge of a parking lot, the code might require you to put in a berm or a wall to separate a sidewalk from a parking area and certain types of development projects. So we said, we'll take that out and allow, say, a fire retention facility there instead. And looking at landscaping so that the types of plants that can go into a bioretention facility are also compatible with a standard landscaping requirements that they are. Little things like, say there are landscaping requirements that require you to use concrete, we'll take that out and just to say whatever permeable pavement, whatever, something like that. But it wasn't a big project to find this area. Well, we had a fairly, we submitted the permit requirements to submit a draft manual to ecology in June of 2014, and it took ecology really a long time to get back to us on it, and it extended our adoption date from June of this year, basically now until January 8th of 2016. So our schedule now is to have the manual adopted by January 2016 and effective on that date. We've had a ton of meetings, a lot of meetings internally to staff for different areas of the manual. We've had a technical advisory committee comprised mainly of practitioners, people who use the manual, or have projects that use the manual. They were very helpful with a lot of sort of quasi-technical and development process-related issues with those people that, you know, some head nodding about what the best approaches are. A lot of things we didn't change, some things we did. We also had a stakeholders advisory committee. We had a few meetings.
Gary and I were at a couple.
And
I think David Meyer was at least one of them.
That was
the technical.
So how would you characterize those meetings? Kind of just more talking about the manual and what it means. And
for me, it was listening, trying to learn something.
Yeah, we didn't get a lot of input from those, but they were good meetings. I think.
For me, the social media was pretty much the same thing. Ron Baranga did 99.8% of the talking.
Yeah,
he knew that. Somebody would ask the question. Very low audience participation and the most information by
anyone. Yeah, I think it's hard because it's very technical and not very many people actually using manuals.
And so it was pretty much the same people there.
Perhaps I think it was more of an outreach process than an information and advisory process, but I think it was. So we got feedback from ecology in April.
Yeah.
And since what we were trying to do is create the equivalent manual to the ecology manual, there were no fatal flaws. Lots of technical comments, and I have a hard time thinking one right now. But they just went through the manual pretty carefully. They found some things where it wasn't consistent. Maybe a figure looked different than a description of a narrative, or little things where we weren't quite equivalent. In their eyes, and we have a few things to talk to them about, but we don't really have any major issues. One thing in Washington, the Washington Department of Transportation has a highway runoff model that can be used. It's an approved manual, and so we wanted to use that manual for county projects instead of the standard development manual because it was designed for road projects. And ecology had one problem with that, and the runoff manual had a process for determining LID and feasibility that was different than what was in our permit. So all we have to do essentially is reference this standard process for feasibility and the Washington manual.
funny thing happened on the way to adopting our manual. Ecology updated their 2012 manual, which is the one that the permit requires us to be equivalent to, in December of 2014, while they were still reviewing the manual that we submitted to be equivalent to the 2012 manual. So that kind of created a little bit of a bubble, if you call it that. And we finally decided to just say, okay, we'll include the 2014 manual, even though it's not referenced in our permit. We won't make you modify the permit. We won't do anything like that. We'll just go ahead and do it. So that added another layer of comments from the Department of Ecology for all the little things that were added for the 2014 manual on top of what we already have in the 2012 manual. So here's the latest schedule, I think, that Jane put together here. So we're in, I'll say early July, and it's a long process to adopt new code, public process. We have to do SEPA, State Environmental Policy Act, review, and we'll do a determination of non-significance because our project isn't going to harm the environment. We still have to go through the process of doing SEPA for it. And then we also have to submit code revisions to the Department of Commerce as a requirement of the State Growth Management Act. So we've already done that. The SEPA's about ready to go out. And then we begin the process of, you know, updating and informing the county manager, the county commissioners. We have to have a planning commission hearing, so we'll have a work session with the planning commission and a hearing with the planning commission. Then we'll have another work session. I think we have one board before the planning commission. And then finally, sometime in November, we'll have, November, December, we'll have hearings on the final adoption of the manual. And hopefully those will go smoothly and we'll be able to implement the manual by January 8th. I mentioned the third-party lawsuits and the prescriptive permit earlier. We really have, Clark County really has no choice except for the approval manual by January 8th. If we don't, we'll get sued. Then we would have, it would be a 30-day notice of intent to sue. And then if we begin an enforcement project with ecology, they probably wouldn't do that. I don't want to do that. So that's our plan. We have it done by January 8th. So here's kind of a checklist of the things I ran through. So here's the Clean Water Commission update. Check that. Next week we're going to meet with the DEEB, which is the Development Engineering Advisory Board, which is another appointed board from the county commissioners that involves people who provide input into how the county manages development regulations. Many of them not. Maybe there's some overlap between our technical advisory committee and the development engineering advisory board. And so they're a really sound board as well for us. That's about it. Any more questions?
Yes. I have four questions.
Four?
Yeah. So, first question is kind of did this group, do you understand what the acronym MS for is? Okay.
Sorry.
So, explain that right now because that's a critical part of how the system works.
Right. The permit that Clark County has is actually a general permit written for all unincorporated Clark County. MS4 is in the Clean Water Act. It's a municipal separate storm sewer system. It's the four S's. Municipal separate storm sewer system. And that's what that is. So the permit technically only covers the area that drains into the ditches and pipes that the county owns and operates, which is primarily public roads. So if you're outside of that area and you're not a municipal entity, then the permit doesn't touch you. But say you're Washington State University, you're a governmental agency, you need coverage under that permit. There's another section in the permit for things like schools, pet cemetery districts, drainage districts, that all theoretically should have coverage under.
The heart of the matter is MS4 tells us that our system is separated.
It's not a combined
system. Not a combined system.
So like if it was a combined sewer like they have up in King County, Seattle, or Portland, it wouldn't have a storm sewer permit. It would have a sanitary sewer right. permit.
Yeah, it's important to know when people come on board on you know, this group here and understand what we're trying to do as far as stormwater and controlling runoff, flow control, and everything else. So kind of explained that, but that's an important thing to understand, and that's important from my perspective. Uh-huh. So the other question I have, the second question is, when you talk about the city of Vancouver, I find this interesting because the city of Vancouver was phase two, correct?
Right.
Okay. So, and we share very little combined infrastructure, right? So we partner very little. However, when they annex, they take over part of our infrastructure, right?
Right, the roads, everything goes to the city.
Yeah, interesting. So you think of that, I'm not going to ask your opinion on what you think about it. I just find it as interesting that in one aspect we say we share very little, and the other aspect is we annex. They are assuming control of infrastructure that we put into place, but we still say we don't share very much.
We don't collaborate with them at all?
I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe we'll ask that later on in the meeting. So that's interesting, don't you think? A little bit.
Yeah, it's been that way forever. You know, the county.
Really?
I mean, I have an old document I pulled off the shelf. We were emptying an office out years ago. It was a 1944 planning document for the city of Vancouver. Back then, it was bemoaning the horrible level of development along Fourth Lane in the county and how terrible it was. I think things have come a long way since then. But no, I think our standards in cities are probably very similar as far as stormwater infrastructure goes.
But there is definitely a huge difference between phase one and phase two. As far as wanting to co-partner on anything, and the level that a phase two committee has to go to control stormwater and what we have to go to.
Yeah, there's some major differences.
The third question is Anna, when you talk about you deal pretty tightly with community development because they're in the job of permitting structures and businesses and everything else. So that's where you kind of have to apply your stormwater plan, correct?
Well, look, the way it works is community development manages the permit center where every development permit comes in, anything at all. And they have the planners that process the development applications, but all the engineering is done by Public Works. There's development engineering, which has people who review the engineering plans, whether it's for transportation, stormwater, whatever. And then another division of Public Works, construction management, does the construction inspection for development projects that are regulated by the county.
Okay. So, what I heard you say there too is community planning doesn't really have a lot going on with the interaction between what we're doing with stormwater. And community planning is actually the one who puts the. They're part of the process when you decide this is going to be residential, we're going to put this product out here. So they're the ones who actually can put the wrong product on the wrong soil type, right? I mean, they have the potential to do that.
The comprehensive plan and zoning process is managed by community planning. Yeah.
Right. I definitely heard, because I listened very well during what you were saying there, but we have a weak connection between community planning, which has a huge impact on how we affect stormwater. That's a fact. We could debate it, but I would love to debate it. Because it's when you put, depending on what type of density, I'm just hearing what you're saying, and I'm looking for where's the weak points in the system, where are the areas that we can fix on it. So community planning has a huge impact on, if I put all this industrial land in this area, which it needs to be next to other industrial land, I get that, okay? But so we take tight cohesive soils, which LID isn't going to work, and we're going to have to sit there and create a stormwater pond, which is probably the size of Vancouver Lake, only with more algae in it. And that creates problems without having that good interaction, which goes into my last statement that I'm going to make, then I'll shut up, is that the only other phase one permittee that we actually intersect with is WASDOT.
Yes.
That's the only other phase one that has to follow the same compliance that Clark County does, which intersects through our roads and everything else. And When's the last time we partnered up with them on anything? Just as a question, you know, if you know.
Oh, well, we partnered with WashDOT on several things, but they're fairly arcane things involving state-level management of TMDLs and...
What's a TMDL?
Sorry. Maximum daily load.
Oh, okay. I don't
know. And so how the state...
Can you explain that a little bit more? Because I don't understand.
I know. I was really thinking about answering that question. We work with WashDOT, but they are a state agency that has their own way of doing things. And actually, the thing I mentioned earlier about the watershed scale stormwater plan, the area that we're working in there is Whipple Creek, which drains from like the Mount Vista area, fairgrounds. And north of 134th, 39th Street, all the way down to the Lake River. It's about 11 square miles. So the freeway, I-5 River, runs right through the upper portion of it. And our permit requires us to do this plan. This is the cost. It's going to take 2 years and cost maybe $700,000. King County's going to spend $2 million on theirs, close to Amish County. And WashDOT's permit says that they have to provide us monitoring data and flow data if they have it and we ask for it. That's all it says. Yeah.
You're not giving me any answers that didn't expect.
This is based on the way things have been.
It's fundamentally flawed with part of the way we do business today.
Which is the higher standard to take one of these. The phase one permit was created around 1990 to cover medium and large municipalities that were identified in the 1990 census. The 1990 census, the threshold for medium was 100,000 people. So the 1990 census, unincorporated Clark County, had 140,000 people in it. So that made us the phase one permit. Then Ecology finally promulgated the rules for phase two permittees and required phase two permittees, which is basically everybody else inside of urban area, to get a permit in 2007. So we had a permit from 1999 on, phase two's permit from 2007 on. There's the main difference between the two permits off the top of my head is that the phase two permittees have no requirement to do a capital retrofit program whatsoever. And then there's little things like we're required to do source control inspection at 20% of basically of any business in Clark County each year. And they don't have that requirement.
So phase one is 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned initially a number of documents. You mentioned that document was 140 some odd pages and a number of other ones. Are those available on the web? Oh, yeah. Just reaching through my mouse.
So, Rod, there is lower than the phase two, like the city of Richfield. And
they don't have any permit at all.
That's right.
So the city of Richfield, like right now, the stormwater manual that they use is the 1992. So they don't even have to use that rigorously if they don't want to.
I know they don't.
So the stormwater management plan is on the webpage. Has the agency on it. Okay. I use a lot.
Okay.
On the front page, like right under the quick finders, the OZ, and I just like, see the stormwater plan is on there. Stormwater management plan.
What is it?
Group of engineers, isn't it?
Engineers, builders, agency people. Like there might be a member from the city of Vancouver. I think, yeah,
BIA.
Somebody from...
BIA, somebody from...
Public Works has people that sit on it. It was created by the county commissioners actually 2 years ago to provide input between the county commissioners and development engineering as a division of the county that regulates engineering procedures and processes, standards for development projects.
You know, I think Ken had a couple of really good points that he brought up. Number one, that there's very little of any collaboration going on. And I've been to every planning meeting, and I haven't heard one thing, one discussion on stormwater at all.
Wait till the next go around.
One area that we tend to collaborate more, which depends on who's on what, that is the education outreach area.
Yeah.
You know, we did the Stormwater Partners project a few years ago. We participated in the Vancouver programs and involved kids in monitoring that kind of stuff. We had the Waters and Stewards for a while. That's done now. But those types of things, I think, are considered.
I have to correct you on that. Maybe the watershed stewards still exist, but we just, because I was correct about that. We just don't have any meetings to encourage you to do it.
And the second good point that he brought up, you know, was the lack of collaboration, you know, some with WatchDog, and I'm really glad to see. But with the municipality?
We meet like every 2 or 3 months and talk to each other about what's going on. But, some of them may actually use our manual after we adopt it because they're going to have to adopt the manual.
Do they ever piggyback with us on projects? With funding?
What kind of projects?
Oh.
A facility?
That will be, you know, in the near future, rolled into their Urban Growth Boundary or City Limits thing.
Well, I think, you know, the areas where the cities and the county collaborate are ones like, say, the Shorelines Master Program, which was done a couple of years ago. That was a huge collaboration. It wasn't a stormwater collaboration. The comprehensive plan involves cities and the county.
The stormwater partners that happened not that long ago, that was a collaboration of all of the local municipalities.
Yeah, that's on the web too. So if you go to the website that Rob just showed you, you can go there and look up Stormwater Partners. And when you go there, it'll show you all the different agencies and entities that were involved in that process. And so what happened is that what we had were people, I think you saw the video I had done last time. In one of those videos, you had people from the City of Vancouver, City of Camas, people from Park County talking, so on and so forth. But in the video, it shows very clearly who's talking to whom, why they're talking about what they're talking about. So, for example, some of them were talking about what are grassy soils, bioretention facilities, any kind of construction activities, so on and so forth. And they talked about why they're doing it, where they're doing it, who's doing it. There was also somebody from Washougal in that video as well. So a lot of folks sat down, put in the other, was funded by the Department of Ecology. And it worked really well to get the word out. So this would be an opportunity for this group, education group, whomever, to take that information. It's good information. It's still relevant information. Spread the word about what's going on in our family and within the schools. It's a really good opportunity. So we still have that community.
Was the Watershed Steers, was that with WCU?
Yes, Watershed Steers was a program that was basically looking at all different ways of how to look at a watershed in and of itself, figure out what's the best course of action to really use them. Plant trees, do outreach activities, teach kids, teach people in the community, make sure the community is fully aware of what's going on in their backyard. I don't know if you were part of that group or not.
Yeah, I went through watershed stewards. I went through that before I decided that get on board with this. Well, actually, I was appointed by, I said, well, it's a little too much. Let's do it, see if I can throw some more stuff in my head.
Can you hold till we get to the public?
Pardon?
Can you hold till we get to the public?
As long as I can get an answer from Rod.
Good luck.
Are you
continuing to hang around for this, or are you getting ready?
No.
Oh, I'm gonna take off.
We'll make a special. Go ahead.
In asking questions, this is for Matt primarily. In your timeline to get the NPDES permit, I didn't know, and Jim kind of hit on something I thought he was going to get into. It was what would prevent you from going ahead or getting the entire thing completed? Would a fee, a clean water fee, that would cause you to not be able to comply with the NPDES permit, would that prevent you from completing it? And the second part of that is, if you don't complete it on time, and according to this, you would be out of compliance, is this group, or has there been a new thing? What happens if you're out of compliance? Does the $25,000 a day per outfall kick in?
It's hard to predict what will happen. You know, just your first question, I think we have the resources in place to complete the project right now. And I don't see that as an issue. You know, somehow the county councilors decided they weren't ready to adopt the annual. It was equivalent and wanted to postpone it or something like that. We're not anticipating that that will happen. We're not anticipating that it won't. It's just it would be a big deal if we did it.
But is the existing fee enough to reach compliance with the new permit?
As far as doing the project that we're doing right now, I believe we have the resources we need to complete it. We have a contract, not contract.
Okay. Thank you.
And then the second part of your question was, what will happen?
Yeah.
I think Rod did a pretty good job in saying, if we don't comply, what will happen is we'll get a third-party lawsuit from either an environmental group or a citizen group. They'll say, partially, you are out of compliance. And my understanding from secondhand information is that the federal judge is not too kind to Clark County anymore. And he'll actually say, sorry, you guys are not doing what I asked you to do. You're out of compliance. You will get a big-time lawsuit. We'll have a big-time lawsuit, not only with the federal courts, but then citizen lawsuit will come for whatever they need as well.
That's part of the concern.
Yeah, we're under a consent decree right now that the county agreed that it wouldn't violate any permit requirement, which is a very broad term. And so, by not making manual, equivalent manual effective on January 8th, it would be a violation of the consent decree. And so, the plaintiffs for that could bring us back to court in whatever time period.
So Nike is going to allow us to use their slogan. Just do it. Give me your any other questions before Rod heads out? No. Thank you very much for chat. Next item on the agenda is our working groups. In place of Mr. Meyer this evening, Earl will sort of.
I'll tell you what I know, and that's all I can really say. So, bottom line is that there was a resolution put forward today in front of the county council. They didn't want to accept the resolution. They want to see what the fee study will be. So we'll give them a copy of what Chris Clifford and Don Benton have drafted. And so there's going to be some discussion between those two folks as well as the county council, and then they'll have to decide. The council will have to decide what they want to do.
So in our last meeting, we were anticipating receiving a document in three different parts at particular time frames that didn't materialize. So the question has been, what happened? Or what was going to happen? It was not going to happen. And so Earl couldn't tell me, and he referred me to Don Benton, and Don's response was, we're talking with county counselors.
And this morning I had a, we interviewed after I talked with Jeff, who's been the acting manager. Jeff said there's a meeting this afternoon, we might know more about what's going on, which then led to Earl's comment. So I guess I'm gonna guess at this point that there will be some sort of report that goes from the department to the counselors, coordinated with Don Benton, which we probably won't provide any feedback or input on at this stage.
I think what's going to happen is the way the legislation is written, the referendum, or the way the code was developed, the modifications to the code, it basically says we have 1 year from the time of adoption. So it would be 30 days before, 30 days after. So I think it's going to be sometime in August before we'll see anything coming out of this process.
So then the question is, what happens at that stage? I guess it depends what the county counselors decide they want done. And if they come back to the department and or to potentially this commission and say, here's what we want you to do, then we'll have some marching orders. Until that happens, they need to tread water.
Well, this was discussed at board time today. We can listen to that.
Yeah.
See what their concerns are. You're right.
So, but it does sound like that there's going to be some sort of report, but I guess, remember at the last meeting, Clifford said that they didn't really need our input, they were happy to get it. So I guess at this point, they decided that at this stage, it's either not needed or isn't necessary or whatever. So, stay tuned.
I would throw, you know, when those phase two and phase three documents are available, I have a lot of clue. No, we won't have a surgery until fall. So basically what you want to do, if you're looking for those kind of documents, you want to speak with Don Benton and or counselor.
Okay. Well, again, I did check with Don again. Don's comment was they're talking with the answer. That was all he was prepared to offer at that stage. So that was reasonable. So anyway, so that would be the David Meyer team update. Any swamp, Mr. Crossan, update?
I don't have any update on swamp. I've been to the swamp at work, but does everybody know what it is down here at the swamp? They all have. Okay. Then I need to get the information out, or Earl needs to get the information out on the overview of what the swamp is. The SWAMP stands for Stormwater Alliance Multi-Use Project. I invented the acronym. So that's what a swamp is. So basically, on some of those questions what I was asking back there, you know, my calendar relationship, you know, how do we partner up? It's kind of red truth. How do we partner up like the city of Vancouver? We're not really too interconnected with them. WASDOT, which is the only other phase one permittee, would be intersect with. We really don't do any co-projects with. And so SWAMP, the nutshell of SWAMP is that it's multi-use, meaning multiple users being WASDOT or the City of Vancouver and Clark County, private developer and institutions such as WSU, school district,
parks department.
It could be parks, it could be any of those, all of those, and many not even listed yet. So the user list is, you know, it's finite, it's a very large list of people who we could actually partner up with on a project. And so the other part of it is, I'll try to make this really quick, but you know, one of us will get the information out to everybody again.
I think everybody's everybody has had it. We presented it about two meetings ago.
Yes. So anyway, so whatever the multi-use, the other part is the multi-purpose part of it. Multi-purpose would be that would really be part of the parks, could be part of the parks department, right? Where we have a park, a garden, or a soccer field, but maybe it dries out in the summertime and it becomes a soccer field after the part of the constructed wetland goes down and we don't need it. Everybody's got to understand that a stormwater facility is essentially a constructed wetland. OK? okay? That's exactly what these things are, with hold water in, retain it, clean it, let it back in, except for with the exception would be some of the cartridge filters and things like that that are in the high density urban areas. So one of the reasons why I started this, and then I'll get back into some other topic, was if you go to the classic example, if you go on 179th Street by the Fairgrounds, which is in the paper today, the guy got killed. If you go down 15th Avenue, which runs down to Albertsons, from 179th and head south, you look over to your left, there's a development going in right over there. This one might be the beach. So there's a county stormwater facility. All right, you'll see the development is being done by R.A. Roth. All it is heavy equipment in there right now. No buildings. Right next to it, within probably 20 feet tops, is their facility. So one of my big beasts on these things, like, you got to build two individual facilities. I can guarantee, I do construction, I can guarantee you can build one double the size for only a third more cost. Trust me. That's not the way we do business today. And I'm more interested in what we need to do. And I will, with a little bit of help from Merle, find me the counterpart on WASDOT, all right, or who I need to contact. I'll get the information out to him. Give me three or four contacts. I'll put a little phone on it. And before the next meeting, I will set up, get the information out, and we will set up a phone conference.
Which
you and I tested. I'll get the information out. It's a Iowa phone number. We can dial. It's free. Phoneconference.com. I'll set up a phone conference. Anybody who wants to participate, I know you'll participate. So we at least got two people who participate. I encourage anybody to get on the line with it after they have this information in their hand, and we're going to ask the question. Part of it, what we're trying to do is identify what the barriers are in doing business like that. That's the job of the swamp. To identify the barriers. And then we can put together
and ideally set up maybe a project.
A project. Ideally set up a project. But even if all we can do is say, hey, look, councilman, look, this is what the barriers are. You know, get it published. Send it out to whoever. People need to know that. But you're not doing your job. These are identified as barriers. What are you going to do about it? The only way political people move is with pressure. No, that's just a fact. So,
good question.
Yeah.
First of all, you're taking an action item to set this up, right? Well, Earl, will that be, or are you going to be sending out some kind of a notice of when this phone call is?
Austin,
I have no clue what you're just talking about. I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
We're just now.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make contact with the appropriate person inside WASDOT who does the environmental stuff. All right. As far as stormwater, I'm going to send them that list what I put together with the questions on it. Okay. What I put together on the swamp. I'm going to get that in their hands. All right. And then we're going to go over and we're going to interview WASDOT on and have them answer the list of questions would have been identified on that sheet.
On a bridge line? Or on a bridge?
No, we're going to do it on a phone.
Okay, so on a bridge line?
Yeah, on a bridge line or conference card.
When will that? Who's going to send out the information?
I will send it out. He's going to give me a couple people I can contact. I will get the information. I will send it out to everybody. I'll set up a couple different times for a conference call. It'll work. You know, and then we'll pick one.
Okay.
And anybody wants to dial in on the conference call. And then my goal on this thing, I'll go ahead. I mean, I want everybody to participate. But I'll kind of lead it off a little bit and ask the questions because I've been doing it. I did it with the city of Battleground already. I've done it with the city of Richfield. And I kind of lead into this. And this way we can sit there and get a feel for how to keep leading into these questions with these partners, possible partners in the future, whether it be schools or whoever. You know, we're trying to find out what the barriers are. That's what I want to know.
So you got two action items, right? One is contact them, and the other one would be set up a bridge line and have the discussion.
Yeah, and I'll do the contact. I'll take her after Earl gets me the right contact person. I can actually set two. I got my friend Jamie Housley has already volunteered. He's a land use attorney with Jordan Ramos. Knows, does land use. He's highly involved in the county. And we can use him for our first test on it. He's a friend of mine. We could dial him up on it. I'll set that up. We can get on. We can do that one first. And then we can, after we go through the conference call, we can sit there and, you know, get together ourselves and talk after the conference call and say, hey, what do we want to do different when we talk to Waz about it? Jenny House would be really low key. Okay? And then we can move up to the next one. We get two of them done. I'll take care of land use. I want to talk to two cities. I'll put that into an overview of what I got from the cities. I got it fully recorded. I'll go through my notes. And I'll put that together for the next meeting, and then I'll set one up with Jamie Housley from Jordan Ramos, land use attorney, and try to get the one set up. And after that, other people are going to have to take off and set stuff up with the city of Vancouver and developers.
Well, should we have, what about a presentation made to BIA?
We can contact BIA, but the overview on it, what I have, which I submitted to everybody, and I never got any feedback, so it is pretty good. But there must be involved now. So, you know, left to my own devices, I'm going to make it the way I threw it out there to everybody, right? And everybody saw it. I didn't get any feedback, so...
Right now, you're the only one on that committee.
Well, I understand that. And the reason that I'm the only one is because the other person was on the committee doesn't care anymore.
I know.
So it's like, if anybody wants to jump on the committee, let's go through. My suggestion is let's go through one or two interviews, get everybody online listening on the interviews, maybe at the next meeting, everybody can raise their hand and say, hey, I like that committee. Because it's going to be pretty easy to do. It's just collecting information.
All right, well, let's get these under our belt.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Education outreach. Earl's been working with staff to work on our slide for our very short 10, 12 slide, 15 minute or less presentation outreach programs. And so when we get those back, then we'll go through them, give additional feedback. When I talked to Jeff this morning, sort of what I floated was an idea by the next meeting in September that we would have had hopefully some slides. We had a chance to circulate them, get some feedback, and then give them a final look so that we can sort of put them in the can that we can actually go out. Because without a presentation that works for outreach programs that's short and sweet, then I haven't done anything good with it. So you'll have that. Fingers crossed. Yes, sir.
I do have one comment on outreach. As we go out and do outreach, each audience, I mean, the group of slides is all good, but when we went to the Hazeldale Businessmen's Association, our presentation was substantially different than when we went to Watershed Stewart's.
Well, what we've talked about at this point is having a sort of a core presentation, and then based on the group that we're going to go see, we will augment that with some material that are much more specific
right.
to the situation. So we get this sort of core base, and then we do some customization or research. But hopefully it's not too much customization. Because we need to go through and make sure it's all accurate and current and everything else to do that. So a few extra slides associated with the whole thing is to try to get all of that stuff done in 15 minutes so that we can engage in a discussion, that we can get questions that we can then record, we can come back to staff, we can get the answers, we have a follow-up process and system where everything is recorded, there's follow-up, it's all nice and clean. Because that was the problem to have. Yeah.
I have a question for who your target outreach audience is. Is it these organizations that we plan to collaborate with, or is it the general public?
This would tend to be in the discussion in the past more general public or general public groups. It would be environmental groups, maybe business groups.
Okay.
There may be some people at Clark College. You probably have some thoughts because Marie's done a lot of
sort of presentations along this conceptual line that occurred.
No, we used to have a large environmental booth, but now the only thing that's out there is the vegetation management.
It's still us. Vegetation management
is still,
it's not large, but still having an environment.
It ain't
still large. Anyway, so that's sort of the concept, the idea. General, have a tweakable the particular group, and follow up process. So that's the report on that. Now we're moving to general sort of discussion time. In case you guys have things, I have a couple of items I would sort of like to discuss. For those who were able to join us for the field trip that Earl put together, we were able to go out and look at a couple facilities, and it was a gorgeous. Gorgeous day to go for a very nice walk. Anybody want to comment about the trip?
The opportunity to interact with the citizen office that had a rain garden that was dying dead.
I walk around Portland a lot, and they have a ton of rain gardens in one neighborhood, and they all can be very functional. And it's very interesting to know what the difference is.
I think part of the difference here is that particular gentleman you're talking to, he came over and talked to us while we were looking at the various facilities there. He's had an ongoing issue, and his issue has been more than just a rain garden. So I think that person has, I think he wanted something more than what he saw, something more than what he expected or received. So what he was complaining about specifically is that there were some seeds in the soil, and the product that he received, the product that we received, was not the right product. And so for him, he received the product that, well, we received the product that wasn't really what we wanted as well, but it was already kind of a little bit late. We had to get the soil in, we had to get the plants in, we had to get moving forward. And the same thing was happening on the other side of the street. It wasn't just him who had that problem. Finally, we looked at where we stopped. As we came around the corner, and we stopped here looking at the little rain garden. He came from the other side of the street. That's where we walked across the street to see what was going on there. Basically, it's the same thing. So, Jeff Schnabel, my interim manager, went out and talked to the fellow and basically had to explain to him, we can't really fix it. We can fix it by tearing everything out, but we're not going to do that. But there are opportunities and ways of trying to resolve it. So I think it's going to be one of those where we looked around, and we recall that we didn't just stop there. We looked at other rain gardens as we were exiting that particular neighborhood. And the other ones did not have that problem at all. Not that I saw. Maybe you saw something different. So just the one and the one across the street. Those two areas, those two right there. And part of the problem is how steep is the slope. And the slope there was steep. It wasn't as steep as some places that were along that same road. The question has to be asked, was it the vegetation that was the issue that was planted? Was it the soil that had bad seeds in it? That had seeds and weeds? It's hard to say.
Or is this Mount Vista?
Yes.
It could have been something that's also been deposited through.
We had a nice opportunity to discuss the potential from a stormwater facility and parkland, and some things that maybe could be done, or maybe not, depending on the particular set of circumstances. It was good for those who were able to make it. It was a nice trip. You know, we can certainly do one again in the future. If anybody else who couldn't make it would like to do it, but I just want to say Earl did a great job. He put together the van. He got an engineer to go with us, and we did the nice tour. We spent the morning doing it.
I brought this and most of it's
happened. Well, anyway, so I just want to make sure that we were aware, and I thank to everybody who was able to make that.
I watched those at one time. They work.
I had sent an email out and said we had some opportunity to provide some feedback on the website for Clean Water, and I want to just give you the feedback from those who sent some feedback and ask you to take a look, and in the next week, if you have any additional thoughts or comments, please get those to me, because I'd like to make sure that the suggestions get in so they can take a look at what's reasonable and feasible, and we can talk about some possibilities for improvements or enhancements. So these were the specific comments that I got back from the people.
You made great comments.
And so I want to thank Marie and Kate, and of course Mark's not here this evening. Although Mark thought it was pretty much just perfectly fine the way it was. So I provide this to you so that you can take a look at it, scribble some notes. If you have any thoughts, please share those back. As you may have heard, if you wasn't clear, the county has been going through both the intranet within and is going to work on the extranet.
So what we've done is I asked the person who does the design of the website for us and asked her specifically, what does she need to make this thing more fluid, make it more educational? So if somebody goes to what is the county's Clean Water Program, Clean Water Commission website, you'll find that there's the boilerplate stuff that is on there, which is the stuff you guys do on a day in and day out, which is basically a recording of this meeting, recording of actions and activities that you're doing, products that you make. But then underneath it, we created a subsection, which are the various groups. It's the financial group, it's the education group, it's the swamp group. So with everything that you do from here on out that is a product, it will go into that particular section, and then it will be available to whomever wants to see it. So this is an opportunity to get back to what the council and the board was talking about when we met with him and the rest of the group, as to say, put the information on the website, and we can see what's happening within the program. We can see what you, Clean Water Commission, is doing, and have a good opportunity to have communication there. And if they have any questions or comments, then they can come through one of these meetings and give Commissioner Rylander a call, Commissioner Schaefer a call, and find out what's going on here. If they want to attend one of these meetings, you can just open the door over there and then it's for you.
So the county is working through, just that you guys just pretty much finished the intranet revisions, but yet more work to do on a larger scale. So it's a great opportunity, just in case you need help, it shows up. So there is, we'd appreciate feedback. And if there's nothing else you have to say today in the next week or so, then we'll just go with what we've got here and make any other adjustments and changes. Finally, for me, the last meeting we talked about, Jim wasn't here, we talked about the whole concept of using Gmail addresses, and I presented the information that Jim had shared, the possibility of using their folder for storing of documents, shared documents, et cetera. Had talked with staff, they don't have any issues. I can't find anything that really would be problematic, other than we would get sort of uniform email addresses. So just as a setup test, I'm going to this next week, I'll send you all an email. I'm going to be Rylander, last name, .ccwc, which was the same format Jim had previously suggested sometime back, at gmail.com, and I'm going to set up a shared folder for any documents. So I'm just going to send that to you as a sort of a test. You can see. And what we discussed at the last meeting was that everybody appeared to be comfortable moving to that type of a format, so using a common denominator.
So one thing I think we should do, Dick, is I like it, right, because I've got multiple Gmail accounts. Maybe at the next meeting we go over and show people how to have multiple Gmail accounts.
I have 4 Gmail accounts currently.
So that might be, some people may not be comfortable with doing that. If you went over that,
sure.
It's pretty briefly, it's pretty easy to do on how to get your Gmail forwarded up from your Clean Water Commission email so you can see where it came from. And
I think you're right, we can certainly do that. And I'd be happy to use mine as an example, because that would be right now when I call up my Gmail, I pop it up for assigning accounts. I have 4. I have 4 different addresses that I use for different things. It calls them up, and I just click, and it logs me into that one. It's exactly
that fast.
That's
how fast it works.
And then the other nice thing is that we can share documents and work and use the tools. So we never have to worry about whether somebody is using a
PC or a Mac or what version of Word, or they don't have Word, or, you know, it's all absolutely uniform for
Word. Google Docs.
Yeah.
Yes.
So straightforward, same set of tools for everybody, never a worry or an issue. So it's clean. So I'm going to start, I'll be the guinea pig and be happy to show you the next meeting. And in the meantime, if you have any questions, if you're uncomfortable, I'd be happy to assist you. Anybody else? Items that you want to discuss? Session is open.
Well, I have massive communication with the public this last week.
Okay.
More than I've ever had. Little meeting when we first had, looking for the crowdfunded program 15 years ago. I got a call from a neighbor a little over a week ago, concerned because the neighbor down his front row, that's a miracle, was burning. Black billowing smoke and flames were coming out. And just turned it over. I'm not sure. So, called her off. I walked into the city. And he put me in touch with Clark Public Health, USEPA, the first time ever I've communicated with those folks. Air quality, Carrie Armstrong was out there, a whole bunch of folks involved. And I met with roughly 8 neighbors. And I went out there, one of the neighbors, who's three of the neighbors that ordered this. To create the parcel that this gentleman has. He doesn't live on the parcel. He rents out a mobile home, and the renter allows two of the neighbors to go in there and photograph. Two of the neighbors have been so concerned that they have set up two hunting camps on each side of the street, documenting this fellow bringing in a dump truck and a flatbed truck. Bringing them fully loaded, and nothing ever needs to stop. The main concern were the neighbors counted 27 55-gallon drums of stuff that was labeled Hetzer Flux isopropyl alcohol from solar oil. I called County Public Health, and Brian counted 30 and 50. I was out there last week and on the neighbor's property, and he and I counted 19 left. The neighbors are quite concerned over safety because all of that bills are on a private well. The fellow is on his cat, a backhoe, and a tractor. He's on it at 7 a.m., constantly digging, burying, and burning. At first glance, that it looked, you know, like looking 55-gallon drums. And public health had been out there, Brian had been out there in June, I think, or June 8th or 9th. And he, you know, the fellow is not certainly the least bit. The neighbors are concerned for their safety as well as their water. The pop of Kelly Hill, you know, he's in the East Fort Watershed. EPA sent a crew out there last Friday and took off all the remaining drums. So he said, I talked to Brian yesterday, he said some immediate danger has been diffused. One of the neighbors is Craig Goodholm. It's that ball. There's a locked gate across this driveway, and when the air quality gal and the fire marshal were out there, they couldn't get in. and the fire marshal said, well, you can't get in there unless it sees and smells smoke. I talked to Brooks at EPA yesterday. He's concerned over the safety of sending his crew in there. And I said, how do we shut this fellow down? Because it looks like he may be operating in an unpermitted landfill. And it's been going on for 12, 15 years. And he wants to, he said, if you can get code enforcement out there and shut it down using your local code until he gets all of his T's crossed and I's dotted. And then his crew would start investigating what he
can. Has anyone contacted the
sheriff? Sheriff has been contacted. So they're clever. He's got none of his property was logged years ago. And he moves brush and debris over the burn pile. So when the sheriff comes out there, it looks like, or the fire marshal, it looks like he's just burning debris. But you can see trenches from one of the neighbor's property. And you know, you can see big burn piles. One and the neighbors have said he has at least a 500-gallon tank and another 1,500-gallon tank buried on the property. That's the name on the barrel. See, we gave the neighbors are so concerned they want confidentiality. They don't want so that so they're using the media as their conduit. These barrels are labeled like from 2005 to 2010. And they've since moved out of Clark County and Hillsborough.
Or the IPA, as you know, alcohol by itself isn't going to be a hazard. Okay. It's probably got all those barrels
or
something else. IPA is clean, let me tell you that. I wouldn't dump 55 gallons straight in the stream, but I don't think there's 55 gallons in it.
And we have 3 CDs of photos from their hunting camp that these two neighbors have set up. So every time he brings in a load and you know a load of asphalt roofing and a lot of construction debris.
What's his business?
Nobody knows.
One thing that concerns me is there the fear of the name is obviously.
The trucks have Oregon plates on them. One neighbor confronted a fellow who was trying to get in through the locked gate, and the neighbor came out and said, well, this fellow's here at 7 in the morning if you want to meet him. He says, well, he owes me money, and I know he has it because...
These are dump trucks?
One's a dump truck, one-ton dump truck, and the other is a flatbed with sticks.
Well, the UNC number's off of it.
I've got it.
I can look it up in 3 minutes if you want to.
We can do all we want to here.
Yeah.
I think what the issue is, I think what Commissioner Rasmus is trying to say here is that she's contacted by somebody,
contacted somebody,
and then what she's trying to do is get somebody to put aside out of business, or at least curtail his business, and make sure that he doesn't do bad stuff to the environment. So here we have a situation which is not already common. It's almost like a 60-minute episode of TV, and that is where you have basically perhaps allegedly some criminal activity going on out here, and then you have EPA involved. So you and I talked about this a little bit as well. So what we have is a situation where we have EPA telling the county to do something. And we don't go tell EPA to do something. So and the way the county operates, we can't just send out a complaint. If it's so bad for EPA, it's not going to be any better for county.
Well, I'm so like, right. Yeah, I'm right. And the folks have to live with this neighbor. If he's afraid to send his crews in there, how are these people feeling this? You know, this is a
heavy
wooded area with young families in it.
So the bottom line is basically what I understand it to be, contacting the fire marshal's office, is that this person does stuff that is legal or illegal, I can't say, and that basically takes product from one place to another place, and that it's still going to be a code enforcement, not code enforcement, but EPA hazmat investigation. They're the ones who took the barrels up. And then also the party who owns the barrels, with the product that's in the containers, they're still responsible for those products, even if it's several years old. So they're the ones that are on the hook to make sure that they're properly disposed of, taken care of, and properly disposed of.
If it, that's correct, because it's cradle to grave.
Yes.
I mean, if the chain of custody, just because it says IPA solar board on it, if there has to be a chain of custody.
Well, I'm not involved in all this stuff, because I'm sure that the EPA knows what they're doing. So I'm sure that they
that's right.
So the process really just needs to play out.
Well, I think there's more than that too. If these people feel threatened and they call the sheriff, did the sheriff do nothing? Did the head of ambulance do nothing? Because I mean that's assault. You know, you threaten bodily harm is assault. And so the question is, what was the response from the sheriff's department to these people's complaints about assault?
Well, public health, they're watching him for burns. Of course, he was there. The burn down went into effect on the 23rd. He was burning that day, and the neighbor was one of the cams called the fire department. And he's on my cell phone, ranting and raving, and they're not getting there. The fire marshal is not getting there. So by the time the fire marshal gets there, it's just nothing but, you know, a little bit of smoke. But you can smell all the chemicals. Odd chemical odor coming off of that property, and it's rumored that he works with Multnomah County, the contractor, cleaning up the drug house.
Well, regardless, it's not legal activity, and if the people, people have been assaulted, have they filed complaints? And if they filed complaints,
the process
what is the sheriff doing about it? That's true, but apparently the process is not that.
That's how I feel. I'm hearing three different things going on. One is the criminal aspect of the assault that has the sheriff certainly. I'm hearing another thing, a code violation, that either the EPA or code enforcement. The third thing I'm hearing is that it's more of a question is whose purview it is to take a legal action to impose a court-ordered injunction to discontinue a particular behavior.
Or a search warrant.
The search warrant could come under any of those things. Right? And each of those, but I don't know that any of those are necessarily the purview of this body.
Right.
No, I brought it forth because of all of this whole street of neighbors, all around us, who lives around these fellows, in their own private wells, got concerned over their water. When he's burning, it's so bad, they have to go inside and close the windows. So air quality is involved. But she couldn't get on this because of the locked gate.
Okay. Well, thank you. I agree with that.
It does sound like you got all the right appropriate agencies involved. I mean, if it's their well, it's public health. If it's the air, it's the EPA.
Yeah.
You know, and
those agencies have to act.
They have to act.
Well, yeah, I have to broach it yesterday. You said probably your best bet is local code enforcement in this case. But I talked to Earl. And at one point, I had my cell phone and my phone going at the same time. These people were calling me.
Right on the fire, the camera, it tells you what you can burn and what you can't burn. You can't burn
anything else.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other commission business? No? Back to the public? Public comment?
Oh, part of the answer is they here.
So, if... there's my agenda. So if there are no additional public comments and no additional commission business to attend to,
then we shall call this meeting to close on the first day of July 2015 at 8:01 p.m.